Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. Thursday morning at 8 o'clock can only mean one thing, and that it means we welcome in our friend Charles Robinson to the program on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles Robinson from NFLBlueBook.com. Charles, good morning, buddy. How we doing?
What's going on, man? It's funny. I've been in so many time zones in the last couple of weeks that I'm staring at my phone at like 8 o'clock, and I'm like, "What's going on with these guys?" I'm like, "What's like? It's like 8:05." I'm like, "What? Are we late? Is the show running? Like, what's going on?" And then I realized I'm in Cleveland in Eastern time zone, so I'm like completely an hour off of what I was getting pissed. I was like, "Why are we not on the show?"
These guys suck, and they can't keep a clock. They can't get the commercial break on time.
Dude, it's been I got into Kansas City to see the Chiefs really late, like several days ago, and all these flights I'm scheduling late because I've been trying to do a lot of back to backs. So like at one point I did six straight back to backs, and I had gone from I went from Titans to Chiefs. So I went from Titans to Chiefs, and like the flight was super late. Everything, it just got all messed up. So I get to my hotel. And, you know, the Chiefs practice like at St. Joseph's, like, you know, 40, 45 minutes away from Kansas City. It's like 2 a.m. I fall asleep. I got to get up at like 6, and I wake up and I'm like, where am I? I was like, what hotel am I in? I'm like, where? And it took me a second to realize, I'm like, oh, I'm not in Nashville. I'm in Kansas City right now. Okay. I'm seeing the Chiefs today. Yeah. It's been that kind of, experience. And I thought I was doing, like, I'm on like I want to say 12 or 13 now, but I ran to Albert Breer yesterday in Browns camp. Yep. And he's like, oh yeah, I've done 17 days. And I was like, man, just screw off.
Yeah, like, I mean, what are we doing? Not some competition here, Albert. What's going on?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I was going to ask you how the stamina's holding up, but I mean, at least you know what state you're in this morning. That's good.
Yeah, I do. I'm glad because I finally get a couple of days break. I'm headed to Boston in a couple hours, but
nice.
See the Patriots. But I'm glad to have a little bit of break. It was nice to get through and you know, see the Titans. That was a lot of fun just to kind of focus on the offense. And you know, it sounds like it was a little uneven experience once they got out to San Francisco for the joints. But you know, either way, it was good to get through and talk to some people in the building and just kind of see, you know, where they feel like the plan is stacking.
Well, let's start there. So you were with the Titans over the weekend. I think Sunday was the day you were out there watching the Titans. What maybe stood out to you the most while watching them, and maybe things that you talked about while you were here that really kind of stuck with you in the aftermath of that?
Well, when I was there, I mostly focused on the offense because I'm trying to, you know, get a feel for where Cam is at. And right away, I mean, Carnell Tate, it didn't take but maybe 15 minutes, and I was like, oh, wow, like, this guy looks really, really good. And, you know, as I kind of watched the progression of practice, seeing him, you know, when they would do, like, 11-on-11, and they were doing, you know, move the ball work and red zone work, just seeing how they used, you know, they're moving him around, he's in motion, he can play outside, he can play inside. I'm sure at some point, you know, they'll fiddle with, you know, some slot snaps just to kind of throw some different wrinkles in there. But I mean, he was really impressive. Like watching him, there are a couple of balls where you could see, like, he went through contact to get, you know, to make the catch. You can see why the fact that he catches the football was such a huge part of his evaluation. You can just see it. Like, his hands are great. And, you know, he caught a corner touchdown in the end zone. I was there at one point where it's just tight coverage, you know, but he put his body in the perfect position. Like, it just, I thought to myself, like, I'd been through several camps at that point. I'm like, this is the best rookie I've seen so far. Like, I mean, he just looks so good. And, you know, I went through Cardinals camp. I'm sure the Cardinals would love if Marvin Harrison Jr. looked like this right now. Like, Carl Tate sticks out more in a practice than Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, has at this point. And I think, you know, part of what was interesting talking to people in the building, not only about that the relationship that Cam is building with him. And one thing that happened in practice that I thought was really interesting too is I'm focusing on Carnell Tate. And you know, when you watch rookies, if you go in, you're like, I'm going to watch this rookie. Like, let me see not just what he's doing on the field, but let me see what he's doing in between snaps. Let me see what he's doing when the second team offense is out there, third team offense is out there. Because, you know, rookies can become, I don't want to say become distracted, but they're just, you just kind of watch, are they like talking to other guys and not focusing on what's going on in the field or whatever. He was like hyper-focused on watching reps. Like reps that he was not in, he's focused on the field. He's watching the second team. He's watching the third team. He's watching different situational things. And at one point, when the second team offense was in and they were doing some red zone stuff, Cam had kind of floated off onto an island by himself and was watching. And I was focusing on Tate, and Tate immediately kind of gravitated right up next to Cam. And you could see them watching the reps together and talking. And it's a really good thing to see, especially when you take a guy with the fourth overall pick, that's his inclination in practice. Yep. Just to let me be right next to the quarterback. Let me be, you know, talking about what's going on in the field. And, you know, I took that as a really good sign of where the tandem's going. But again, getting back to talking to people inside the building about Cam, clearly the emphasis is they're working short to intermediate to long with Cam, which is like they're just getting Cam into the mindset. And this is very much, it reminds me a lot of like Josh Allen and Brian Daboll. Here's what's in front of you. Like let's play it conservative and we'll open it up as we go. That we know you have no problem opening it up. We know you have no problem, you know, breaking contain, breaking pocket and making a play happen or basically going for it. Let's pull it back and let's start with, you know, the short, what's given to you. And if we can wire you to the point where you're taking what's given to you, we can move on to that next stage and open it up a little more and open it up a little more. Now, that'll be a little frustrating for some of the downfield receivers. Like, I think they've been happy with what they've seen from, like, Alec Aomanor, but I think they also know we're really trying to do things right now. We're not trying to go down the field a lot with Cam right now because we know he's got the not only the ability to do that, but the motivation to do that. Let's instead work on the short to intermediate stuff and just get him locked in on that. Once we can get that consistently in his mind to just move the ball, then we can start to press it and push it further into his comfort zone of making big plays. And I think you could see that on the field. I thought Cam looked really good, you know, when I was out there. You could see the progress, and you could definitely see him. I'd had that conversation in the building before I went out on the field, and then I watched, and I'm like, I can see it. I can see this guy trying to take what's there first and being a little conservative, and to me that showcases some year two growth.
Well, I think Titans fans will be excited to hear that. I mean, if you know the big headline in the NFL yesterday, Charles, was Kyler Murray winning the starting job in Minnesota, and that's no, you know, secret that was going to happen. You've been talking about that for months. I guess the other quarterback battle that I'm really interested in right now is, what does Cleveland do? Like, is Deshaun Watson going to start? Right. Is it going to be Shedeur Sanders? What do you kind of come down on what's going to happen with the Browns here?
Well, so I was in Browns camp yesterday, and it is a true competition. Like, it's clear that it's, you know, they're splitting reps between these guys. Deshaun will start the first preseason game, but it's not, I don't want to say it's meaningless because, you know, I think being the quarterback who goes out first, you know, two things happen. I've often seen that first impression, especially if it's a really good impression, will anchor and resonate moving forward for a staff, especially if you can be consistent and build on it. And you can go out as the first quarterback to start the first preseason game and really put yourself, you know, in the driver's seat of a quarterback competition. And then the second part that can happen with that is you can put pressure on the other guy. Like, so now Shedeur Sanders, if Deshaun Watson goes out and plays well, Shedeur Sanders is sitting there going, okay, well, you know, now I have to match that. I have to, you know, you can feel a little more pressure and want to push it and then potentially make mistakes. And so it can certainly compound things. That's why it mattered, I think, who the Browns put out there first in the first preseason game. But, you know, watching them in practice, you know, you can kind of see each player, what they kind of bring to the table. Watson, despite the injuries, I think he's moving pretty well. I still think there are, you know, turnover concerns with him. And then with Shadur, at times when you watch him in practice, there's some downfield accuracy concerns. His ball is not always like super clean. He threw Isaiah Bond laid out and made an unbelievable catch in practice, a big play catch down the field. And it was kind of a wobbler that Shadur had thrown. Now that, you know, the spatial placement was great, but it wasn't the cleanest spiral. It's just, you can see the things that they're both trying to work through. And, you know, I just talking to Todd Monken, the head coach, he flat out, he's like, look, man, I'm just taking the guy who can give us the best chance to win. I just want to win football games. Like, I really don't care how the quarterback does it. You know, he's like, and we'll ask them to do it in different ways over the course of a game, but it's going to be which guy, you know, puts us in the best position to win. It's not about youth. It's not about age. It's not about experience. It's not about who's had injuries or who we've paid. He just doesn't care. And he kind of laughed and, you know, he made a joke about like, he's in his 60s. Like, he's like, I don't have time to do anything else right now. He's like, the only thing I can think about, he's like, this is probably my last job. He's like, so, you know, I have to win football games right now. So I think the exhibition games will matter for the Browns. But if you ask me, am I certain the 2027 starter is on this roster right now? I'm not. I don't think we'll know that until we watch him play throughout the regular season.
So, Charles, going back on Kansas City, like, they're, I mean, obviously they're interesting because of who they are and the foundation that they've already built. You got Mahomes coming off the injury. You got Travis Kelce and what kind of feels like is going to be his final year here. You've reshaped some of the team, and you brought in Kenneth Walker, you know, high draft pick at corner with Delane coming in. So, I mean, there are a lot of people that think they're just going to pick it back up and be right back toward the top of the list of AFC contenders. I am very fascinated by them because, you know, I think it could go a bunch of different directions with Kansas City this year. How do you feel about the Chiefs as they're stepping into things with Mahomes back in the fold?
Well, two things that are interesting. Number one, I think they would have drafted Carnell Tate if Tate had gotten, you know, had gotten past four. Yeah. And if the draft had fallen the right way, I do think that's the guy they would have moved up and drafted. You go through and I think, having seen Kansas City for a long time and the rise of Mahomes and how the previous iteration of all those Super Bowl teams were built, you look at them now and you feel the reach for leadership. They're looking, particularly on offense, they're you can see the transition and they're like, okay, we need to find an identity with this next wave. Obviously, Mahomes is there. That's always going to be your centerpiece. That's always going to be the rock that you know will be there. But you can feel it. Like, Kelce's transitioning his way out, obviously. You know, Tyreek Hill was such a huge part of those early teams. They've never really found that again in the wide receiving core. You know, it's weird because, like, Tyquan Thornton's really become a big leader in the wide receiver room. And I'm curious to kind of see how that goes forward because he's not the most talented guy in the room. And so it's just interesting to have a set of receivers, a guy who's, you know, he fills a good, capable role for them, but you would like it to be Rashee Rice. You would like it to be the, you know, the uber talented alpha in that room to really be leading the room. So you can feel them trying to figure out where are we going to get beyond Patrick Mahomes as we transition and move forward. Where are we going to get that identity from? I actually think Kenneth Walker has sort of stepped into that void because of the way he practices, because of the mentality he brings on the field. He's had like multiple kind of little scuffles in practices. Like he's got like an edginess to him, a physicality to him. And I don't think they have a problem defensively on the leadership side. You know, Nick Bolton really has filled that role, but Walker has stepped in this camp and just given a little bit of toughness, I think, to the Kansas City offense that they lacked and a little bit of attitude and, you know, the willingness to go out there and push around the defense and basically try to apply themselves. So it's interesting just to kind of see them in that transition mode. It's rare that you bring in a free agent running back and then he kind of becomes a little bit of a tone setter for you. but that's where they're at. I don't, with what you said, I don't know how that will translate on the field. Moving into the regular season, but it's certainly not, this is not the classically led, bunch of veterans that they've had, leading the way. Now they're definitely reaching for some leadership on that offense, and Mahomes looks fine. I mean, physically he's fine, but it's just the surrounding pieces where, particularly on offense, you can see them trying to figure out who are we going to be and who's going to be, the individuals that are going to shape that.
So Charles, I'm looking at the Bears and the year that they had last year. Obviously Ben Johnson steps in. They have a great first year. They win a playoff game, unfortunately. And that's the way that went down. And I'm reading a quote that Ben Johnson had with The Athletic. And he said, quote, you've got 31 other teams coming to training camp saying our goal is to win the Super Bowl. I want more than that. I want to have the highest scoring offense ever, which happens to be the 2013 Denver Broncos. I know how many points per game they scored, and I want to surpass them. I want shutouts. I want blowouts. Like, Ben Johnson has never really been afraid to speak his mind there. How do you – I mean, they've had some injuries that they're dealing with in camp. How do you foresee this going in year two with Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson, that partnership together? I mean, are they going to build on what they did last year? Could they be a candidate for maybe a significant step back? How do you view the Bears heading into all this?
Yeah, it's funny too, because Ben's done a good job, and I think this is – it's pointed in the way that he's doing it, of really drawing the focus to himself. So he talked earlier in camp about, hey, we might be the regression. We're one of the regression candidates because of how we won games last year. And I think that raised some eyebrows, because you don't often hear a head coach step to a podium and basically say, hey, yeah, that's a danger that we're the regression candidate this year. And then, as you said, he's touted wanting to have this, uber explosive offense that puts up points like a pinball machine. And again, I think that's him drawing it to himself, while also putting some pressure that he thinks, Caleb Williams and the offense can handle. Luther Burden goes down with a groin. That's problematic, because, Burden was certainly, I think, going to be kind of that X factor type in the offense. And they're confident he's going to be out there, week one. I don't think he'll see much of the field, the rest of the preseason, but they feel like he's going to be in good enough shape to go week one. But that's still snaps that you lose. That's continuity that you lose. That's rhythm that you lose. I will say Roma Dunze looked really good when I was in practice with them. He kind of had an up and down second season. It feels like he's sort of settling into what should be that number one role for him. Colston Loveland, he could be this perennial 1,000-yard tight end, like explosive. He looks fantastic when you watch him. You can see they really want to lean into him being a significant mismatch player, moving into his second season. I just think it's all going to depend on health. It's all going to depend on, how the offensive line holds up. Caleb Williams looks really confident. He seems a lot more mature to me. When you listen to him talk, you see how he runs the offense. You can see him. He's applying himself in a way where he's like, okay, this is my offense. Now I'm taking ownership of it. I'm the lead. Everyone's looking at me. The way he speaks to the media is a little bit different. Physically, he looks better. I know there was he talked about losing. I think he said he lost like 15 pounds in the off season. You can see that, in him. There's just a level of confidence that I think now is settling in for some of these young guys. But losing Burden, that's tough, and we'll see how that manifests itself early in the season. But Johnson's clearly one of the best play callers in the NFL. I think he can shape this as long as the offensive line is healthy and consistent. I think they're definitely going to be an explosive team. And I think Caleb, I hate to say this because I did this with CJ Stroud early in his career, where I'm like, I already see this guy kind of on a league MVP path. I think Caleb's on that trajectory, but every time I say that, it goes into a tank. So I guess I'm.
Can you say it, please? That'd be nice.
I put the Madden curse substation, the substation curse on the Bears and Caleb Williams right there.
I mean, by the way, Titans got through a practice, only one injury on the substation front. So I feel like that's pretty good. We'll see how it goes tonight.
Did PK make it through the substation?
PK made it through. He said he was standing right next to it, though. He said maybe short-term exposure to the substation.
You can't not be. Like, you can't not be standing right next to it. And kind of a funny story, when I went through Niners, I don't know if I told you this last week or not, but when I went through Niners, you know, they changed the way that they allow the media to shoot practice.
Yeah.
And so, and they didn't think about it. And so, like, I guess apparently, you know, Kyle Shanahan, like, went off. Like, he's like, every clip I'm watching, the substation's in the background. I'm like, yeah, somebody didn't think that through when it came to the media shooting practice. Because now it's literally, it's like, instead of a skyline or trees, it's this massive set of, like, power lines and transformers.
So I was watching the Hall of Fame speeches last weekend, Charles, and, you know, Drew Brees gets up there and Sean Payton sitting in the crowd. And, you know, it got me just thinking about the Broncos, the year they had a year ago. Obviously, it was a great year for them. You got Bo Nix coming off the injury, stepping into things this year. I still, like, I look at that defense and the way that it's built, and I just think there's, like, such a high floor for the Broncos based on how good their defense is. And, you know, we'll see if Bo Nix ends up being a player that, like, leads them to Super Bowls moving forward. But, like, I think the Broncos have some staying power here. Number one, I think Sean Payton's a great coach. But number two, that defense is just so nasty that I think they're going to be really good for a long time.
Yeah, I don't think the defense – they're not – I went through the Broncos. They're not worried about the defense. And like you said, I mean, that really is their high floor. They know that, you know, they're going to have a defense that should be able to limit opponents to, you know, the low 20s, which nowadays in the NFL, if you can limit a team to the low 20s, most teams score in the mid 20s, you're going to win a lot of games. But there is some, when you talk to people inside the organization, this is another one of those teams where they're like, yeah, we are kind of a regression candidate, because I think they were 11-3 in one score games last year. They caught a lot of green lights at times in games. And the big thing for them, what they're really preaching, is we can't get off to slow starts. Not only can we not get off, we can't get off to slow start, like, winning and losing early in the season. Like, we have to win games early, authoritatively, and then also in games themselves. You know, they want to offensively crank it up, you know, earlier, and not have to depend on the defense to carry them until they can find a rhythm. When I was in practice, I will say, I think Bo Nix is fine, you know, but he kind of felt to me, and again, I'm only in for a day, so take this, you know, let's take it with a grain of salt. He looked a little slow, just slightly. And I wonder if that's just, you know, because of the offseason having to heal from the late season injury. And I think he'll be fine, but there's certainly things that they have to sort out there. There's kind of a running back by committee that they're still figuring out. I think the wide receivers, you know, Cortland Sutton is what he is. I think he's, you know, there's a level of consistency that he brings to the table, but then they have some younger players that they're, you know, Marvin Mims really, I think, needs to take a pretty good stride forward. Troy Franklin, guys that fill out the depth chart, I think, at that position, they're really expecting, you know, to take a really big step forward for them to go where they want. Defensively, as you said, they're going to be fine. I don't think there's any question about that. Injuries, you know, as long as injuries don't hit them, I don't think that will ultimately be the issue. But it's getting Nix in that rhythm early is going to be really important, you know, for them. And again, when you talk to people in the building, they'll tell you, we won a lot of games last year, but we were on the margins in a lot of areas, and that can't happen again, because yep. You can't do that in back-to-back seasons, because you're depending on some luck, you know, to have that 11-3 record in one score games.
Is this a training camp tour that you're on taking you through Buffalo at any point?
It is not. Okay. I actually was going to make a decision. I could have gone to Buffalo or New England, and I chose New England.
Probably a good call. I was just going to see, like, if you were ended up in Buffalo, maybe you could do public service and take care of the sightline problems in the new stadium, which is just amazing to me that we're dealing with this.
That's crazy. Like,
you guys not think there's maybe football being played down there?
The first thing I saw was the scoreboards, right? And I'm like, wow, you just don't see modern, you know, multi-billion-dollar stadiums built nowadays with jumbo, like, quote-unquote jumbotrons that are no longer jumbo. Yeah. like mini-trons. I mean, almost – I looked at it, and I'm like, wow, that seems – I don't want to say cheap, but, like, you don't go into modern stadiums and not have a massive video monitor. So I'm like, all right, well, if that's the worst, okay, keeps the focus on the field, I guess. You know, there's something that sort of plays into that. But then I was like, well, if your focus is on the field and there's a glass kind of stairway your way, or there's bad sight lines, and then that's when all the stuff started to roll in, where it's just like all these different bad angles. And I've never seen a stadium rollout get pressed like this, just poor and not driven by media, driven by fans.
Yeah, the like, Bills Mafia is very upset.
Yeah, extremely upset. I'm glad that the planners and the contractors, you know, implemented the neat kind of, you know, broken table thing into the design, you know, in the concourse. I guess that's cool, but maybe you should have focused on how fans are actually looking at the field and whether parts of the field are blocked from certain seats. And yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, that this has kind of rolled out the way that it has. And I'm sure they're just begging for football to start as soon as possible so that they can just get past this. Bill, I would expect a lot of Bills fans can prepare to stand most of the game because that might be what it takes to see the field anyway.
I mean, I saw some of these pictures. I was like, how is this possible in 2026 where you're building a new stadium and this is the sight line for some of these seats? It's just amazing to me that it played out that way.
That's the first conversation, right, that I think you have to have is, like, what's the fan experience, which is how it's like, okay, you know, how big your – I know this is stupid because most people are like, you shouldn't be looking at the video monitor. You shouldn't be looking at the quote-unquote Jumbotron anyway. You should be looking at the field, but – when you're spending that amount on a stadium, you know, it's if that is not where money is going, you have to be able to say, okay, well, this is where the rest of it went. And it just feels like, yeah, there were clearly mistakes made. And you have to hope that, hint, hint, future stadium is built by NFL franchises. Take heed what happened in Buffalo and make sure that your stadium has good sight lines.
Charles, have fun on the continued training camp tour. Tell Vrabel we said hello in your next stop, and we will talk to you next week, my friend.
I will do that. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Charles Robinson, our guest from NFLBlueBook.com. Go subscribe today to NFLBlueBook.com. He is on his training camp tour. I think stop number 14.
I'm loving the little – he's got some fantasy football nuggets there at the end of some of these posts. I'm loving it. A little fantasy angle. Somebody asked, I think it was Dylan Antioch, about our Robbie and Rex Road fantasy league? Football league.
Going to start putting that together next week.
Going to have to repeat for my crown, try and come back and go for 2 years in a row. So looking forward to getting some spots filled on that coming up quickly.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that next week. We'll react to what Charles had to say. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. The Sounds taking on Indianapolis today at First Horizon Park. First pitch at 6:35. Catch all the action on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Maple Street Biscuit Company, and Social Cantina. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.